Welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller Podcast for Friday. We made it. We made it to Friday. The 15th day of November 2019. It's hard to believe 2019 is almost over. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, giving us all the great reviews on iTunes. Although the latest review, somebody's like, I don't like hearing his children in the background. Somebody took the time to write that. I can't understand what's going on because I hear children playing in the background. I thought, Mr. Grinch, that your heart grew three sizes or whatever the hell it was at the end of that thing, but apparently it shrunk back down. Maybe that medicine for your enlarged heart worked. But everybody else has been great. I still appreciate the fact that somebody took the time to write a review. You know, if you hate the show, you hate the show. Not everybody likes delicious steak. So if you don't like steak, you don't write a good review of a steakhouse. I would first suggest you don't go to a steakhouse for dinner, though. You know, that's just me. But what are you going to do? We got a big show today. We've got our Friday interview edition, and this week is with best-selling author Lee Smith. His book, The Plot Against the President, The True Story of How Congressman Devin Nunes Uncovered the Biggest Political Scandal in U.S. History, is selling like crazy all over Amazon, selling tens of thousands of copies. You may well have a copy of it already. Unfortunately, no signed books, because I wasn't able to get any copies before I sat down with Lee last week, because Amazon was out. He sold out on Amazon, and I sold out on Amazon too. But you can order him a copy of my book for, it's still on the, because Walmart did a price thing, so Amazon matched it, and that's why my book is only $5.99 right now. But you can, apparently it's that price on Walmart's website too. I haven't checked that, but you can order it on Amazon and they'll get it because they've ordered a bunch of them again. So you can still lock in that $5.99 price. It'll make it there before Christmas because I talked to my publisher yesterday. But so just because it's not in stock currently doesn't mean it won't be soon. So lock in that $5.99 price and get it on the cheap, and then give it to somebody as a gift and say, I spent, and tell them whatever the cover price is. I think it's like $28. Say, I spent $28 on you. Where would you get me? Make them feel guilty. So yeah, I'm probably adding more drama to your Christmas season than need be, but Festivus is coming. And if there's one thing my book has, is an airing of grievances. Somebody emailed me that I didn't mention Festivus in the reasons to buy my book. It's Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Boxing Day, whatever weird holidays are out there, New Year's Day, a Thanksgiving gift. It's a wonderful Thanksgiving gift. And somebody said, hey, you didn't mention Festivus, because I always mark Festivus. And I said, you're right. The airing of grievances, it's good for that. And even if it's not, it makes a decent projectile. And it wonderfully levels out tables that are about an inch and a quarter, inch and a half out of whack. So if you got a leg that's really, really short, my book will take care of that problem. We talked to Lee Smith. You're going to like the interview. It's about 35 minutes long, so you don't have to listen to me ramble all that long. But until then, until we get to the interview, we do have some things we want to talk about. I want to talk about Wolf Blitzer. My God, what a jackass. What an absolute and total and complete jackass. And he had Kellyanne Conway on his show and decided to just go at her because of her husband. Use her husband against her. Do you imagine? And he says something like, I know there are issues in your marriage. What are you talking about? She gave better than she got because Wolf either knew he was full of crap or didn't want to ask the question, whichever it is, isn't good. Neither is a good look. We have the audio. You'll hear it. I'll explain it. We'll talk about it because I just imagine he's hanging his head in shame. And then just for gits and shiggles, we're going to relive some of the highlights of when Wolf Blitzer was on Celebrity Jeopardy, because he was terrible. Just as a reminder that simply because somebody is on television does not make them smart. Just because they can read words off of a teleprompter does not mean they understand those words. So we'll get into that. course, Nancy Pelosi is scrambling to try and polish the turd that is the impeachment hearings. Today, we've got another round, I believe. So we'll talk about that next week. We also have a Democratic debate coming up next week. Good Lord, action-packed week ahead of us. And this one isn't even done yet. Oh, man. But first, let me tell you about why I use CBD oil. Now, hear me out. I know you're going to skip through this. You're like, oh, I don't need this crap. Look, check out CBD oil benefits. Just search it on Google, Bing, whatever you use. Check it out and see what people are saying. And then think, hey, wait a second. Are all of these people paid shills? Are all of these people lying? Are all of these people in on what could be, what would have to be the greatest con of all time? Or maybe is there something to this? There's something to this, because I was a skeptic just like you. I'm sitting there going, this is crap. This is garbage. All these people, and I see it at the grocery store. CBD oil is available everywhere now, and you can get some junk out there, and you can get some good stuff. Well, I thought, why not get the best stuff? And that's what AncientLifeOil.com carries. Their CBD oil is mixed with coconut and hemp oils. It's tasty. I got the chocolate mint flavor. You just put a few drops under your tongue. No harm, no foul. Try it out. Like I said, search. See what everybody's talking about. See what the reviews are. Find some skeptics out there. And then try it for yourself. You'll be a believer. The little aches and pains, my knees are much better. The eye strain at the end of a day, staring at a computer screen, gone. It doesn't get you high. It's not got THC in it. So don't worry, you're not going to go and get wasted. You won't feel anything as far as a high goes. You'll just feel better. It works internally to make you feel better. Go to AncientLifeOil.com for the highest quality CBD oil. Just AncientLifeOil.com. At checkout, enter promo code Derek. You get free shipping. Try it once. You'll be a believer. We'll be back for more. It's amazing. I'm shocked by it. I have it. Actually, I'm looking right at the drawer that I keep it in. It's right by my desk. CBD oil from AncientLifeOil.com. It's the real deal. It's the best out there. And it works. Most importantly, it works. All right, let's get into this Wolf Blitzer nonsense. It's embarrassing. Wolf Blitzer is not a bright man. Wolf Blitzer was, we'll play the thing. He didn't make it. Well, he made it to Final Jeopardy because it was a charity thing. But otherwise, he was $4,600 in the hole. I'll have that audio for you in a second. Oh, by the way, you can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com, and I'll give you a return email. I'll get to my emails this weekend. It's been a heck of a week doing the radio show and still figuring that out and then doing this show, and then there were dinners and events and just... I'm looking forward to the weekend, even though I have to work on the weekend. I talked to my publisher, and I've got to put some finishing touches on something for them. No, not a new book that's ready yet, just an idea. But I got to do that and some audio editing. My work is never done. I just get breaks where kids climb all over me. Not that I'm complaining, because I like it. It ain't breaking rocks. That's what I always say. People are like, how can you do this? You can forge. How do you do that? How do you find time? Like, it's not breaking rocks. It's not roofing. I've done roofing. Roofing, you come home at the end of the day and you just collapse. This, you go, oh, I could use a nap. And sometimes the schedule affords you. You're roofing, you don't get a nap. There's no napping in roofing. There's pooping on roofs. I've done that. Yeah, when you're up on a roof, not a like a house, but a building. You got nowhere to go, and you got to go. You got to go. Nobody needed to know that, but whatever. It's Friday. So Wolf Blitzer had on Kellyanne Conway, advisor to President Trump. And in his interview, he asked the most inappropriate question. And it's inappropriate for many, many reasons. George Conway, her husband, Kellyanne Conway's husband, was hired by MSNBC to be a legal analyst for the impeachment hearings. Now, why? Because he's George Conway. He's married to Kellyanne Conway. That's really the only qualification that he brings to the table. Have you ever heard the name George Conway before? Kellyanne Conway came on the scene and George took to Twitter whining and complaining about how much he hates Donald Trump. No, you haven't. I guarantee you haven't. It's weird because he uses this little cartoon avatar of himself. He's got the cartoon avatar. And then you only ever see one other photo of him. I've only ever seen one other photo of him where he looks like he's going, whoa, in the look. The eyebrows go up and they're looking, eyes looking to the side. It's really stupid and bad. And I always thought, doesn't this guy have a better picture of himself? There's no better picture. Why would you use a cartoon of like a court sketch drawing rather than your actual photograph? And then I saw him and I said, oh, okay, now I get it. Well, that he brought that look, that stylish, moppy, and not that I got a lot of room to talk about in the hair department, but my hair that I've cut myself since I was 15 years old looks better than George Conway's hair, this lawyer, Washington Power lawyer, MSNBC contributor. Well, Wolf Blitzer asks Kellyanne Conway about her husband and something he said on television. But in the setup, in the preamble, in the rambling preamble, up to the point where he gets to the question, Wolf makes a little crack about, I know there are issues there in your marriage. And Kellyanne hears that, and the look on her face is like, what the hell are you talking about? There are plenty of people who are married all across this country who disagree vehemently with their spouse on politics. And God bless them. Look past that crap. That's important, but it's not as important as the things that you deal with every day and the things that you deal with somebody that you're married to, that you, you know, you see every day, you live with every day, you raise children with, whatever it is you do with them. Much more important who they are than what they believe in politics. You know, for some people, look, I need some people to disagree with me on some things or at least tolerate my disagreements with them, is I don't want to argue politics with my friends and I don't want to argue politics with my wife all the time. So you either have to agree to a certain degree or agree to disagree and just move on. However the Conways work it out is between them, and I couldn't care less. But Wolf Blitzer bringing it up is, and forgive my French, it's an asshole move. There's no other way to put it. And the way he casually says, well, I know there are issues there, like they're in couples counseling or on the verge of divorce, whether they are or not, I have no idea. Wolf Blitzer has no idea. But to imply that to his audience, as small as it is an asshole move. So let's listen to the beginning of this, and we'll stop it and comment as needed throughout. But just with that mind set up. And keep in mind, I'll tell you what to keep in mind in a second. I just want to give you the setup. Here it is.
I just have a final question, a sensitive question, and it's a political question. It's a substantive question. I don't want to talk about your marriage. I know that there are issues there. Your husband, George Conway, he's a lawyer.
Did you just say?
Your husband, George Conway.
Did you just say there are issues there? You don't want to talk about marriage?
I don't want to talk about, no, I don't want to talk.
Why did you say that?
I don't want to talk about your marriage. I don't want to talk about your, I want to talk about a substantive point that your husband, George Conway, made. He was on television all day yesterday during this, the first day of the impeachment hearings, and he said this about the president of the United States. I just want your reaction to the substance of what he said.
So before you play the clip, which I haven't seen, why? And why are you doing that?
Because he's a legal scholar, he's a lawyer, and he was really going after the president of the United States, and he was all over television yesterday.
And come on,
I just want you to, I just...
And he's married to me?
But, you know, he happens to be married to you. What's wrong with that?
You can run the clip of Jeffrey. He happens to be married to me. That's bizarre. Correct.
He happens to be married to you through a series of things. I want to ask you about your something said on another network. Something said by your husband. I don't want to talk about your marriage. Well, then why are you bringing up your marriage? Why couldn't you just say, I want to get your response to this guy and then just play the clip or anything else? Not do it. I know there are issues there. I know there are issues in your marriage. You're teetering on divorce. Let's be honest. Let's get down. What kind of, why set that up? Why bring that up? And I'll tell you what, when we get to what clip he actually plays and you hear it, you'll think, why play that clip? He's built, George Conway is he's a legal scholar. He's a legal scholar. He's not a legal scholar. This is the power of television. You put somebody on television and the audience thinks, well, this person knows their stuff. They wouldn't put just some scrub up on television. They have to know that, you know, these people are the best of the best. These are news networks. They scour the bowels of the world to find the best and brightest people. They only have people on who know what they're talking about with firsthand knowledge. They don't. I go into this in detail in my book, Outrageous Mortgage Incorporated, because this is one of the things that drives me nuts. It is who's available, who's on staff, who can we get, who would be good on this. This is not just MSNBC and CNN. This, sadly, is what Fox has become. They don't have newsmakers on anymore, nobody directly involved in the story. They don't even want to talk to them. Then they don't go, the next level would be, we're going to go to a local reporter who's covering this story. No, they don't do that. They go, for reaction, we turn to two people with no connection to the story whatsoever. One's a liberal, one's a conservative. They know their roles. They know what they're supposed to say. Now, here they are as they bicker for 5 minutes. And then we go back to me and I wrap it up and we move on and repeat this over and over again for an hour. It has nothing to do with it. And I'm not going to name any names. I know a lot of you love these people and you're free to love anybody you want. But if you see somebody on cable television talking about a wide range of topics, you're just getting their opinion. It's not an informed opinion. It's just their opinion. They've read an Associated Press story and they got an opinion on it. So does the guy next to you at a restaurant. So does the guy next to you at a stoplight. Are you going to roll down your window and say, hey, I'd like to pick your brain about what is going on up on Capitol Hill there, or the border situation? We need to talk about this. Or, hey, let's talk about the North Korean summit and what you think we should next do in regards to the Middle East situation. You would get the same level if you gave that person, all right, I'm going to give you a 2-page-long Associated Press story and maybe a 30-second video to watch. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk for 5 minutes about your thoughts on it. That's what cable news has become. So to sit there and say, well, George Conway, he's a legal scholar, is false. It's a lie. It's garbage. It's crap. He's bringing up what George Conway said because George Conway is married to Kellyanne Conway, and he wants to sort of make her uncomfortable, or the people, the control room at CNN that operate Wolf Blitzer's brain have decided this will make compelling television. Let's see how she responds to a question about something her husband said about Donald Trump. CNN has on staff and on air all day yesterday and the day before for the impeachment hearings people who have said exactly what George Conway, you're going to hear George Conway say. And by the way, he's a legal scholar and he's making a very important point part. George Conway is a lawyer. What his credentials are to be a legal scholar, I'm not really sure. Again, that's just a made-for-TV title. But the point that he makes in the audio that Wolf Blitzer, the video that Wolf Blitzer plays, is generic, anti-Trump, and literally has nothing to do with the law. It's personal. George Conway hates Donald Trump. So the fact that he's a lawyer and or a legal scholar is completely irrelevant to the point that he's making. So why say it? Why build it up that way? Well, we know why. You got to build up his credibility and you got to make Kellyanne squirm a little bit. If they really just wanted to play this clip, they should have just filmed secretly Kellyanne in the green room waiting and ready to go on camera and going, watch her squirm. We're going to put her husband up there. It's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. It might as well be Punked or Candid Camera or some hidden camera show. But Kellyanne, to her credit, and this is why she's so effective at what she does, is she just doesn't take this crap, and she's pushing back on Wolf, who didn't expect it, clearly didn't expect her to push back this way, and really get up in his grill about him being a complete jackass.
But he's also a legal scholar. He's got a substantive point. Listen to
Jeffrey Toobin's point, your senior legal analyst. I loved his point on CNN yesterday. We don't have to play a competitor's clip. You could just play the CNN clip where Jeffrey Toobin said it's a problem that Taylor and Kent never met Donald Trump. He said to Jake, it's a problem.
I'm not disagreeing with Jeffrey.
Jake Tapper said something
I'm not disagreeing with either.
They might have to meet the whistleblower, at least talk to him or her, him in private, because you have to be able to confront your accused.
Right.
But You should not have just said to your audience, I don't want to talk about your marriage, quote, I know there are issues. Why would you say that? What is it?
I don't want to talk about
your marriage. Why would you say there are issues?
Listen to what your husband said. I'll play the clip.
Let's play the favorite game of our leftist friends, shall we? Would this happen to a man? Do you think this would happen to a man? Do you think they'd get Bill Clinton in there and they say, Bill, you know, before we get into this, I want to play a clip for you. I know you got problems in your marriage, and I don't want to talk about your marriage. And he's like, what are you talking about? Hey, I don't know. What? Hell? What? No, of course they wouldn't. And then they would not play a clip of Hillary Clinton saying the toughest call she ever made in her life was staying in her marriage, or the bravest thing she ever did in her life was staying in her marriage, because Bill was out getting BJs from everybody. He was out, you know, doing quality control on glory holes from coast to coast. And he's not going to be asked that question. He's not going to be asked, you know, Bill and Hillary sitting there going, hey, you know what? We want to ask Hillary. We're going to play a clip of Juanita Broderick here describing the time that Bill allegedly raped her, and we'd like to get your response to this, Hillary. And Bill, you just sit there, and if you have any comments, we'll come to you after that. No, they wouldn't. But because Kellyanne is a conservative, because her husband despises Donald Trump at a personal, vitriolic level, and because it's CNN, what the hell? Let's go for it. And again, Kellyanne pushing back and really putting Wolf on the spot. And Wolf is realizing, or somebody's whispering in his ear going, dude, abort, abort, get out of there. Quick, get to the clip. We must get to the clip. Do not answer the question about why you said there were troubles in her marriage. The troubles in her marriage would be what? That her husband doesn't like her boss. Well, congratulations. That's pretty common in the world. But it's not common that a so-called news anchor would bring it up in a preamble to a clip. Now, again, I'm losing focus here. I'm going to pull it back because we're about to hear the clip. Wolf Blitzer set this up as George Conway. That's the reason he's playing a clip from George Conway, not because he's married to Kellyanne Conway, but because he's a legal scholar and he's making a very powerful, important point in this clip. That's Wolf Blitzer's argument for playing this clip. Has nothing to do with whom he happens to be married to. So with that in mind, let's hear the next one.
The problem with Donald Trump is he always sees himself first. Trump is all about Trump. And that's why it was inevitable he'd get himself into the soup once again. And that's what this is all about. He was using the power of the presidency in its most unchecked area, foreign affairs, to advance his own personal interests as opposed to the country's.
That was the astute legal scholar George Conway giving analysis you can't get anywhere else. MSNBC clip on CNN. CNN has on staff their own legal analysts, their own talking heads, their own dim-witted analysts who have all made that point dozens of times that day and the day before and every single day. But for some weird reason, Wolf Blitzer felt compelled. He had to get reaction from Kellyanne Conway. I got to play this. This clip from this hot young legal scholar looks like the Goodyear blimp half deflated with a hairstyle that is, let's just say, fresh out of the shower, air dry chic. And, they broke the bowl after they cut his hair. Well, let's get your reaction to that. Can we do that? That's why they have to do it. No, there's absolutely nothing related to the law in that clip. Nothing. This is how he got himself into the soup. Donald Trump is a raging narcissist moron who hates everything and everybody, and he's abusing his power to advance his own personal agenda. Wow, let me call Harvard. Let me call the Supreme Court. We're going to get that entered into the record there, George. That is groundbreaking legal analysis that is shocking to everybody who hasn't heard the countless breathless reports about every single one of your freaking tweets over the past 2 years where you've been saying the same thing nonstop. And CNN's Wolf Blitzer's going, well, he's a legal scholar, don't you know? And I just want to get your reaction to it. What do you think her reaction should be? My reaction would be, yeah, all right, he's an idiot who doesn't like, he doesn't like the president. What are you going to say? There's nothing legal in there. How do you respond to that? Well, Kellyanne, to her credit, keeps giving Wolf crap because he deserves to be covered in it.
All right. That's a serious allegation, a serious charge. He was using the power of the presidency, its most unchecked area, foreign affairs, to advance his own personal interests as opposed to the country's.
That is his opinion. And we, I don't think MSNBC was lacking for anti-Trump voices. And we've heard things like that said on CNN for 3 years. And we've heard things like that said on that network for 3 years and elsewise. And where, honestly, where is the shame? Where is the introspection of people who have said for 3 years, respectfully, Wolf, actually beginning in May of 2017, I'll quote your wife's husband right now. I won't talk about your marriage, but I'll quote your wife's husband. 2017, you asked Angus King, are we getting closer to impeachment? I mean, where does anybody ever feel badly about getting it so wrong?
Wolf, of course, doesn't have an answer to any of this. Wolf just kind of sits there and insists that he was just quoting a noted legal scholar that you never heard of before Kellyanne managed the campaign that won the election and then won the White House. I don't know. I pulled a name out of a hat and it just happened to be George Conway. What are you going to do? I don't know what to tell you, Kellyanne. It's just a coincidence that the most salient point made on cable television by a noted legal scholar was from your husband on another network. And that point was, I hate Donald Trump. He's stupid. He's narcissistic. And he's using the presidency to try and advance himself, not the country. Wow, thank you for that. I'd like to sign you up for a book deal and offer you truckloads of money, George Conway. What a thrilling... I'm giddy with excitement over your next utterance. As noted legal scholar, not talking about the law. It's your husband. I know you have trouble in your marriage. Could you imagine having to be married to somebody whose boss you despise so much? Ugh, yuck. I mean, you're a gross lady, and this legal scholar has to wake up next to you every morning. Can you apologize to him when you get home, Kellyanne? I'm Wolf Blitzer. Before we get to the Lee Smith interview, I just want to play a little clip here to remind everybody of Wolf Blitzer. It's some of the highlights, just some of the highlights, of when Wolf Blitzer appeared on Celebrity Jeopardy a few years ago. You know, you think Wolf Blitzer, he knows his stuff. He's a smart guy. He's in the news. He's an anchor. He's on CNN. Bright guy. At the end of regular Jeopardy and Double Jeopardy, Wolf Blitzer ended up at negative 4,600. That's not just, ooh, you blew it all on one last final daily double. No, that is, you got a lot wrong. You got a lot wrong. And we have highlights of it. He would not have been around for Final Jeopardy were it not for the fact that it was a charity game where they erased his failure and gave him $1,000. But here's just a sampling of the genius that is Wolf Blitzer.
The name of this pasta, similar to penne, means little mustaches. Doesn't sound so tasty now. Wolf.
What is fettuccine?
No. If you can read, you can cook. She wrote in the introduction to her classic, Mastering the Art of French Cooking. Wolf.
Who is Julia Childs?
That's right. We have a score change to announce, and that affects you, Wolf. I'm informed that you put an S on Julia Child's name. It's Julia Child, and so we have to deduct the 800. So you're at 200. King David and Jesus both hailed from this town. Wolf.
What is Jerusalem?
No. An accused person in court, along with his counsel. Wolf.
What is a defendant?
No. Selected some material from a larger work. Wolf.
Annotated?
No. The 1850s saw a bad one of this five-letter word that refers to an economic crash and the fear-driven rush to sell. Wolf.
What is a crash?
Nope. Wolf, things have not worked out as well as you had hoped for, I'm sure. Andy's so much faster on that signaling device today. But it's long been our policy on Celebrity Jeopardy that all contestants get to play in the final round. And so even though you're at minus 4,600 now, we're going to wipe that out. Going to give you an even $1,000, so you get to play in Final Jeopardy as well.
Wolf, you're dumb, and we feel bad about exposing it to a national audience, because when you read a teleprompter, you sure seem smart. But we're going to throw you a participation ribbon, and you get to stick around for Final Jeopardy anyway, and we'll throw some money towards your charity. Hopefully it is something related to literacy and your own continuing education. Wolf Blitzer, ladies and gentlemen, multiple award-winning journalist, Wolf Blitzer. This is CNN. All right, after the interview, we have a little clip of Nancy Pelosi that is ridiculous and sort of indicative of the Democratic mindset towards the idea of guilty until proven innocent. It's scary and hilarious. But right now, we step away to have the interview with best-selling author Lee Smith. All righty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Friday video interview edition of the Daily Daily Caller podcast, or the middle of the audio version if you subscribe on iTunes and all that good things. Either way, the show is on and going now. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, spreading the word, and all that good stuff. As we do every week, we drag somebody from their life into our world and pick their brains. They're always much better looking, much funnier, and more successful than we are, and this week is no different. We're joined by Lee Smith, author of the new book, The Plot Against the President, the true story of how Congressman Devin Nunes uncovered the biggest political scandal in U.S. history. Lee, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and hi to listeners and viewers and everyone in your audience.
Yes,
it's a real pleasure to be here.
No swiveling. I'll do the swiveling.
Okay, all right.
Before we get into the book, I want to talk a little bit about how you came to write the book. Yeah. You've been in journalism for 30 years. You write at Real Clear Investigations. You write at The Federalist. You write at Tablet Magazine. You've been doing this a very long time. This is a story that seemed, you know, it was certainly covered. It seemed like at the time, but turns out not particularly well. What made you decide that not only this book had to be written, but that Devin Nunes, because he's somebody everybody knows, everybody's seen him on television, either on Fox as a guest or on MSNBC or CNN as a punching bag and a punchline and clips from Fox. But he's really the hero of the story, despite what how he's been portrayed. So before we get into the details of why that is, what made you think this is a deeper story? What made you discover there's a deeper story
here? Well, I knew there was a deeper story from the outset when this started, before the election even in 2016. And that was because covering the Middle East, which is what I was doing at the time and still do to a certain extent, I saw how the Obama administration had marketed the Iran deal through what we now know as the echo chamber.
That Ben Rhodes described, basically,
right,
a bunch
exactly.
of dumb 20-somethings will print anything.
Exactly. Actually, as it turns out, Rhodes was throwing a bit of a bone to the people who are really at the center of the echo chamber, and those are the older, more established journalists. He was throwing it on the 27-year-olds, as he put it, who know nothing. Actually, as it turns out, at the center of the echo chamber are the people at the big places, the big names, whether this is David Remnick, at the New Yorker, whether it's people at the New York Times or Washington Post. Anyway, I recognized the messaging that they were doing regarding Trump's ties to Russia as an echo chamber operation. It was the same outlets. It was the same people making the same sort of noise, amplified and validated in precisely the same way. It was also, I'd lived in New York for a long time. I was raised in New York. I've had Donald Trump's words ringing in my ears since I was a teenager.
Screaming at you from the front page of the tabloids. You can't escape it.
Exactly. So there are many things that one can say about the man who is now our president. But the idea that somehow he'd been conducting secret relations with a foreign power in the most media-saturated city in world history, also under the watchful eye of the New York City Police Department, the FBI New York field office, while Mr. Trump was also working while he also owned casinos and was involved in real estate. The idea that he never came to the attention of the FBI or the police department, that they weren't looking closely, was preposterous. So I knew the story was nonsense from the outset.
So you sit down to write this. Talk a little bit about why Devin Nunes is in the subtitle, is the focus of the book, because, again, he's known sort of as a talking head and a member of Congress. But you give him credit. You know, he discovered this whole thing. How did you come to, once you're interested in the subject, once you've got the subject and the absurdity of the idea behind the allegations, it centers on Devin Nunes. How'd you get to that point?
Well, as response to the book shows, which has been overwhelming, and I would want to say surprising, but it's not. It has nothing to do with me. It's a good book, but the reason the response has been overwhelming is because people around the country recognize what Congressman Nunes did. And so watching this, watching what the congressman did, how he stepped forward starting in March 2017, identifying the fact that Obama officials had been unmasking members of the Trump transition team, when he stepped forward and did that, how many people started to attack him? I was among those, again, like a lot of people in the country, who said, that takes real courage. And again, he was not, it's not just that he was attacked on places like CNN and MSNBC and by the Washington Post and the New York Times. He did not have a whole heck of a lot of support on Capitol Hill either. Mm-hmm. He has an excellent reputation as a thoughtful, moderate Republican. The problem is that he was attacked so much, other Republicans were essentially terrorized by what the press and what political operatives were doing.
Well, yeah, the ethics complaint against him and had to recuse himself for a while.
That's right.
It was proven bogus, but he was forced to step back. The attacks on him got to be so much.
Exactly. And other people on the Hill were watching what had happened. And as much as they admired and respect him, they were worried. We saw what happened, how they ran Michael Flynn out of the White House, how they compelled then Attorney General Jeff Sessions to recuse himself. And of course, we all remember the daily, nearly hourly drumbeat of the Trump-Russia operation. Here's Russia. There's Russia. It terrified most people. Congressman Nunes stepped up. He took the heat. He believed he was right. He pressed forward. And it was an impressive thing. I'm certainly not alone in looking at this and seeing how impressive it was. And I just thought, well, that's really, he's a heroic figure. And so before I figured out how I wanted to write about the entire Russiagate thing, a way to find how to tell the story, it was just, again, just being impressed by the congressman. Like millions of other Americans.
Do you think he was prepared for what came his way when he decided to be sort of the vocal opposition to the liberal narrative?
No, I think it was impossible for anyone to understand what that would look like because of the nature of the press and the nature of even political operations has changed profoundly. I mean, we see right now what's happening with the impeachment inquiry. I mean, all of these things are made up out of, well, it's nonsense, like the Steele dossier itself. So once you have nonsense at the center of it, what's built up around it is it's just absolute garbage. And the fury with which this campaign was waged, I don't think anyone saw this coming. The congressman didn't see it. I think most Americans around the country didn't see it. I think we're all still stunned. We're less surprised now seeing the impeachment inquiry. But the vehemence of the Russiagate campaign, it's astonishing still.
Let's go back now to the sort of start of this story. June 16th, 2015, Donald Trump steps on an escalator, comes down, and really angers every liberal in the country. Mm-hmm. He sort of did already when he was flirting with the idea. And in the Obama administration, they kind of had the long knives out with him with the birther stuff. But from that moment on, there's a frenzy. Mm-hmm. Not just there were people who took him seriously, but not too seriously. And one outlet that is mistakenly blamed, given credit for whatever, the actual origins of the Steele dossier is the Washington Free Beacon. I love the Washington Free Beacon. But they hired Fusion GPS to find some things out about Donald Trump. They're a very small operation, so they didn't have somebody to dedicate to it. That's been spun into this. They funded the Steele dossier. They started the Steele dossier. But talk about the evolution and the reality of this little do some research and opposition research that the Free Beacon started to this massive scam that was used by our government to spy on American citizens.
Well, the Beacon had, you're right, that brought them on, brought Fusion GPS on to do opposition research. But as we know, opposition research is a legitimate industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, people pay to have dirt dug up on their opponents.
Well, let me ask you this, because from an opposition research point of view, if you're doing opposition research against somebody running for you for city council or even for Congress here, and they've lived here and you're looking here, you can probably have a staffer do that pretty easily. Somebody like Donald Trump, who owns property around the world, a billionaire, has traveled the world, knows everybody around them. If you go to Norway and you don't speak Norwegian, you're probably going to have a hard time searching information. So you need to outsource it to a group that has the resources to reach out to somebody in Scandinavian countries who knows the language, right? That would be kind of why the Free Beacon went that route.
Right. Again, it's a large subject. The kind of research they wanted to do on Donald Trump, and we know that in October 2015, Fusion GPS brought on Nelly Orr, who's a former Russian professor of Russian history, and so she's a Russian language linguist. So it was clear that was the direction that Fusion was taking it in. We don't know exactly what the Beacon was looking at. I'll say one thing that's very important. The Beacon has made the correct point to say we had nothing to do with the dossier. It's very important that people understand what happened between a very particular period when Fusion GPS was no longer doing opposition research. The plan was to look into the Trump team's alleged possible ties to Russian organized crime figures. Might make a certain amount of sense. Again, Donald Trump has businesses in New York, and New York has a lot of an enormous Russian diaspora, one of the largest in the world. That's what Fusion was first looking at. In my book, I talk about different documents they have that shows that they were actually engaged in that kind of research, some of it focusing on Paul Manafort and focusing on other Trump advisors. The Steele dossier is something very different. The first report is dated June 20th. This has nothing to do with Russian organized crime, nor is it about opposition research. What it's about the Trump team's alleged ties to a foreign power, the Russian state. What they appear to be doing, what this appears to be, is laying the groundwork for a counterintelligence investigation. In other words, that was the purpose of the dossier. It was written to eventually obtain a warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. So just to come back to the Free Beacon for a second, opposition research is a perfectly normal thing that political campaigns do all the time. They are correct and right to say we had nothing to do with the Steele dossier, because the Steele dossier is a very, very different enterprise.
When it comes to this shift to try to start the counterintelligence investigation, there was still very few people not named Trump who believed at all that Donald Trump had a chance to become president. Why did they start this? How did it get to that point? Why would they want to spy on the Trump campaign if you think you're going to get 60% and win 47 states? Was it an ace in the hole? Was it in case during Clinton's first term, if somebody got a little lippy, they could back channel them and screw them over? Why would they care to the point that they would start this massive witch hunt?
Well, the first thing is, remember, if we go back to Watergate, Nixon was going to walk over any Democratic candidate, whether, they went after Muskie at first. And then they had McGovern. So why did Nixon break into the DNC? Or why did people break into the DNC on behalf of the Nixon campaign? Because it's part of the logic of power. If you have powerful instruments to exercise your power, this is what people did. And so the Clinton campaign exercised the same power. They had the ability to get the FBI to spy on the Trump campaign. So they did. That was the first reason. The second reason is because there was one large concern the Clinton campaign had, and it wasn't about Donald Trump. The Clinton campaign was worried about the emails that Hillary Clinton had deleted. This is the essential point, right? James Comey cleared Hillary Clinton in July 2016. But the fact is, because everyone in the Obama administration had communicated with Clinton on that email, as Andy McCarthy has so elegantly written, there was no way there was ever going to be a prosecution. There was no way there was going to be an indictment. What they were concerned about was not how she mishandled classified information. They were concerned about some of these items going public, some of these emails going public. That was their big concern. With that concern, there was no way to change the message. What they needed to do was a way to dirty the messenger, saying, don't you pay attention, never you mind what these emails are about, what Hillary Clinton is doing with. The important fact here is that these emails came from Russia to benefit Donald Trump. That was, they were worried about the Trump campaign dropping an October surprise. And that October surprise would look something like the Clinton campaign's emails. The dossier is quite specific about how the Russians are handing information to the Trump campaign. So they were trying to dirty the Trump campaign to clear the Clinton campaign.
So this entire thing is a sort of a, started as a prophylactic move against dirt truth coming out about Hillary Clinton.
That's a large part of it. Then they move at a later phase to their defending against an October surprise, and also they are seeking an October surprise. And again, that's the other purpose of the dossier. It's an electronic break-in. They want to break into the campaign and find something, presumably Russia-related, maybe not, to wave in front of the cameras and say, here's what we have on Donald Trump.
But, Lee, I've read the New York Times. The dossier had nothing to do with the FISA warrant. It had nothing to do with launching the investigation. Yeah. I've seen people who represented organizations that are called by three letters swear to me that they had nothing to do with it.
Yes, their problem is that they say that the investigation of the Trump campaign began July 31st, 2016. Pay no attention to the dossier. I know that we talked about this a lot in the past, but as it turns out, it had nothing to do with the investigation. It only supplemented the investigation and gave us more information. Well, as you mentioned, it was also used as evidence to obtain a warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. And as the documents that I have in my book show, the Steele dossier was fed by the FBI. So it's the actual, it appears that the FBI itself had a hand in writing the dossier.
That's one of the shocking revelations in there. There's always been the Steele dossier. Michael or Christopher Steele wrote this thing after doing all of his research and talking to his sources in Russia. But no, the FBI was involved. And Christopher Steele was barely involved.
Steele has a very small role. He was mostly in one of the chapters in the book. I refer to him as the avatar. I mean, he's used to market information to the press and also as cover for the FBI to feed information back into its system.
Is this part of the world intelligence community's sort of mutual back-scratching agreement? If the UK wants to spy on somebody in the UK, they can't do it. So they say, here's a name on an envelope to the CIA who can do it, and then they can wink and nod anything back to them and vice versa.
Congressman Nunes and his team, while they found that there are different foreign officials who are involved, it appears that the former envoy from Australia to the United Kingdom, Alexander Downer, is involved. There's no evidence yet that foreign intelligence services played a role. Christopher Steele is a former British intelligence officer, and he absolutely played a role. But it appears that there's no evidence right now that foreign intelligence services, active officers really played a role in setting up the Trump campaign. A lot of the stuff that John Brennan has said, for instance, about receiving information from British colleagues or others, I believe this is just cover that Brennan is using. I think it comes from, it was manufactured by U.S. officials and used by U.S. officials. And it sounds more, it sounds genuine and authentic if they can say, well, this is came from our friends, our closest allies in London or Canberra. I suspect that looks more like cover than fact.
The Clinton campaign for a long time, they didn't deny it. They were quiet about it. Their involvement in this, they ponied up. They paid for it. They did it through intermediaries, through law firms, through Fusion GPS. Why did they hide the fact that they had commissioned this? If it's a true document,
right,
why would you care if you originated it?
Well, because that's a very good point. They know it's not a true document. They know what it is and the purpose. Something that's very important, though, we have even people highly critical of the Clintons. Over the last couple of years, we focused, and rightly so, on the abuses and likely crimes committed by the FBI, DOJ, different officials at the FBI, DOJ, CIA, Director of National Intelligence. One of the things that's gotten lost, though, is the actual role of the Clinton campaign. It's important to remember, I think, that what happened, the FBI's spying on the Trump campaign, was done to benefit the Clinton campaign, right? This is what's shocking, right? It was a real political operation. The idea that it was an investigation is nonsense. The FBI hid this behind all sorts of programs and instruments that are designed to keep Americans safe from terrorism and from hostile foreign actors. So they used classified information. They used classified counterintelligence programs, confidential human sources, the secret FISA court. That's how they buried what they did. These things were not supposed to talk about. It was a political operation.
But there's no way, just from a layman's point of view, anybody listening has to be thinking, you bring this giant apparatus to bear on behalf of a campaign or directed towards another campaign. There's no way the president of the United States doesn't know about this.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't contest that. I mean, there are different, I don't know if I'd call them fingerprints, but there are certainly different traces that we see that I've identified some of them in the book. I think most of your audience is going to recognize the text between Peter Strzok and his paramour, Lisa Page, where she says POTUS wants to know everything we're doing.
Right.
So that's one bit. There are other bits as well. I mean, when that famous Susan Rice email to herself memorializing this January 5th meeting.
President Obama wants everything above board or whatever.
Yes. And that's nonsensical, everything by the book. The real important thing, I think, to take away from that email to herself, Barack Obama says it's important for us to ascertain whether we can share information regarding Russia with the incoming team. Once you strip that of the bureaucratic niceties, all he's saying is collect information on the Trump team about Russia. Ascertain whether we can share information about Russia. So there's Barack Obama talking about collecting from the Trump team or on the Trump team regarding Russia. And we know what happens the day after that meeting. January 6th, then FBI Director James Comey goes to brief President-elect Donald Trump at the Trump Tower. And what's he doing? He's trying to collect information related to Russia on the president-elect.
That's when he briefed him on the dossier.
Exactly.
And then, curiously, it gets reported on CNN.
Strangely.
Because he, I'm sure it was just a coincidence. But the dossier was around for some time. It was being shopped around, not just by the Clinton loyalists. Even John McCain was trying to sort of get somebody interested in this out of nothing more than, I can imagine, as spite. Why was there no biting on it if Hillary wanted this to be a potential October surprise? And there was no doubt that the media was on her side, by and large. Why didn't anybody bite back then?
Well,
they clearly don't care that the stuff is unverified or proven false.
I mean, a few people did, We have Michael Isikoff from Yahoo News who wrote about it. David Corn. This was all pre-election.
Yeah, but real journalists.
Kurt Eichenwald.
Again, real journalists.
There were different.
Him and his octopus or squid porn. Or
there were different. There were different procedures in place. Presumably, this is how I like to envision it, that there were different procedures in place so that at what we once believed were prestige press organizations like the New York Times and Washington Post said, well, look, this P tape you're talking about sounds interesting. And they did. I mean, they sent people out to look for it. Mm. So no one just said, sounds ridiculous, forget it. They all sent people out to look for it, right? And they obviously should have picked up on something. How is this a story of their briefing at least half a dozen other news organizations? Well, it's an operation, right? If you have a source will give you a story. That's how actual journalism works. Mm. So they should have said at that point, well, just get these guys out of here and I never want to see them again. But there were different firewalls in place. They couldn't prove it. They couldn't find anything on it. So it wasn't until after that CNN story, which broke down that firewall, and now everyone could report on it once CNN did that story, which circumvented it, right? The CNN story was about the briefing about the dossier.
Right.
So now everyone could report about it.
And then
it.
They just throw in the line, we have not yet independently verified anything here,
right.
But here's wild allegations anyway.
Right.
And they feel as though their bases are covered from a journalistic standpoint. So then Trump is sworn in. Uh-huh. Devin Nunes starts looking into this, starts sniffing around, and how does he discover all of these unmaskings? And just describe how unprecedented unmasking is, and what unmasking is for the few people who don't know.
Right. Well, what happened was in different intercepts that come from, mostly the NSA, comes from different intercepts. The names of U.S. persons are supposed to be minimized. So you're not supposed to see them. Of course, it's not illegal to unmask a name, but you have to have a good reason to do it. There's supposed to be a national security reason for doing it. What the congressman saw was evidence. He was shown evidence by sources that this had happened in an unprecedented fashion. I mean, the numbers were unprecedented.
And especially between the election and inauguration day, it wasn't like over the summer. During the campaign.
Right.
Like right at the end, suddenly all these unmaskings were taking place.
There were a tremendous amount of Trump officials who were unmasked. And so that got his attention. And one of the points that he made at the time was he saying it's not about Russia. I believe what he meant about that was that this is not related to what we hear this investigation is about. They were simply finding out what Trump team officials were doing, where they were going. They were just spying on the Trump transition team. That's all they were doing.
One of the things I find most disturbing is there doesn't seem to be a single Democrat who looks at this and says, they violated the rights of someone like a Carter Page. They spied on him.
Right.
You know, maybe there's a good reason for it, but from a conceptual standpoint, I have a problem with that.
Right.
Did you find anybody behind the scenes involved in all of this this lurking, or has Devin Nunes found anybody behind the scenes in all of this, these moving parts? There's a lot of moving parts to this. Is there anybody who was given pause and said, I know what we're doing here.
Right.
Should we be doing it?
Right. On the Democratic side, you
mean? Yes.
No. And it truly is shocking. I absolutely agree. And I'll make it even a little larger. You would think that someone at some point, some Democrat at some point, would say, like, well, look, I don't like Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. I like Donald Trump less than any of you here combined. But this whole thing with Russia, it's nonsense. I know it's nonsense. We all know it's nonsense because we talk about how it's nonsense in the cloakroom or wherever we Democrats hang out. So let's put this aside because it's not great for the party. We look like obscurantist lunatics, and it's terrible for the country because it's eating the country apart. And you see what these leaks are doing to the press. we're losing the media. The media is turning into a third world media. So let's put this aside and let's fight Donald Trump in the normal ways and get back to politics and argue about the things that we should be arguing about. Did anyone do that? No one did it. It's not even as refined about like, I am worried about this. There are, I should say, though, press people who did it. And they had a much harder time than you and me. These are people from the left. So we're talking about people like Glenn Greenwald,
right?
Aaron Maté, who writes often for The Nation. Aaron has been doing fantastic work on this. So there are journalists who have taken this on. Matt Taibbi. These are people more regularly associated with the left, but their work on this has been terrific. And again, for them to stand against the left and call them out, say, "Hey, Rachel Maddow, you're a lunatic, and you're full of it." And so they deserve a tremendous amount of credit for standing up.
Even
to
if
this.
You do it from a self-preservation standpoint, so if we do the, if we get away with, then it can be done to us.
Right.
You know, even if you just look at it from that point, and not even a civil libertarian point of view, it's from a mutually assured destruction point of view. Right. You would think it would occur to somebody and say, maybe we. We don't have to wholeheartedly embrace this while still pursuing it, I don't think. Right. Now, as we get close to the end here, Lee Smith, I know how writing a book works. The journalism aspect is something I'm not familiar with. My book was not a journalistic exercise. But when you set out to write this, mm-hmm. I assume you had a notion in your mind, an outline in your mind. What in the course of it, in doing all the research that you did and writing it and talking to the people that you did you ever have a holy crap moment? I had no idea it was this far, or it was this bad, or I'm shocked by this thing that I've uncovered.
That's a little difficult to talk about because all of us have been living with this for 3 years. So at a certain point, you can't. I mean, that's why right now, why the impeachment thing. If we were to have an American, say a Rip Van Winkle, who had fallen asleep, he fell asleep sometime in 2014 and woke up now, like, what is going on? But all of us who have lived through Russiagate, we now see impeachment. It's like, well, it makes total sense. Of course, we have the transcript here to show what President Trump really said compared to this nonsensical whistleblower's complaint that reads like a Washington Post op-ed.
Right.
But
written by a team of lawyers.
Exactly. But we've all become so accustomed to this now. Unfortunately, we're in a place where what's shocking is to see the thing as a whole, to see how bad things have gotten. So it's not one thing, but again, it's the larger structure of what's happened here.
We're going to continue to learn more about this, obviously, but do you think there will ever be any semblance of what a normal person would consider justice?
Congressman Nunes has spoken about two things since he and I have been speaking for, about 2 years. He said two important things are, first is there has to be an accounting, and the book is part of the accounting of what really happened. The other is accountability. And that, the only people who can do that are at the Department of Justice. I'm optimistic that the Attorney General Barr, and the man who's investigating everything that happened, U.S. Attorney John Durham, I know that they're serious people, and I'm optimistic that justice will be done. It's very hard to imagine how we move on from this moment if justice is not done.
Lastly, Lee Smith, when somebody closes the last page, they've read this whole thing. They sit down, cup of coffee, bottle of beer, bottle of scotch, read it straight through, going in blind. What do you want them? What do you want their thought to be when they close that back cover?
To understand what happened, really, just to see what happened, the depths of it. And again, there's a lot we still don't know. And this is what we hope Mr. Durham will be finding, and there'll be stuff that we'll be finding for many years, even after his investigation is wrapped up. The most important thing for me is that really that people understand what these rogue officials did in our intelligence community. I want them to understand that, and I also want them to understand what Congressman Nunes and his team did. That's the most important thing. And then if people want to get angry, yeah, or if they want to get sad, or if they want to find some way to assist, I don't know. But again, the most important thing is just understand clarity. That's it.
Well, Lord knows there are enough people out there reading this book. Number one on Amazon for its first week.
It's amazing.
Congratulations on the success. The Plot Against the President, the true story of how Congressman Devin Nunes uncovered the biggest political scandal in U.S. history. Lee, congratulations.
Sure,
thank you for coming
much.
In.
Thanks. It's great
Go
to be here.
Buy it now.
All right, there you go. That was our interview with Lee Smith, a really smart guy. Really enjoyed talking to him. Check out his book. You probably already have, considering how many it's selling. It's making a huge, huge impact. Lastly, I want to play, before we wrap up and get out of here for the week, a little clip from Nancy Pelosi. Let's hear Aunt Nancy. Shall we talk about the idea of innocence until proven guilty, or more appropriately, guilty until proven innocent? She's asked about all the milieu that is being done in the House this week with this impeachment hearing, and how the American people are supposed to think that, you know, the president, that there's still a question of whether or not the House will impeach.
All this milieu is a seeking of the truth. It's called an inquiry. And if the president has something that is exculpatory, Mr. President, that means you have anything that shows your innocence, then he should make that known. And that's part of the inquiry. And so far, we haven't seen that, but we welcome it.
There you have the Speaker of the House declaring that, look, we presume you guilty. And if you have evidence that proves you're innocent, bring it forward and we shall consider it. But until then, you are guilty until proven innocent, Mr. President. It's the Kavanaugh model, I think, is what it's officially called, but it might as well be the Trump model now. He's guilty of something. All we have to do is investigate every aspect of his life and we'll find it. And we'll get him. We'll nail him. The Speaker of the House. What a damn joke. What a disgrace. But you're not a disgrace because you're awesome, because you're listening to this show and spreading the word and telling everybody about it, and I appreciate that. Share it on social media, rate and review on iTunes, all that good stuff. The website to help out is patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Otherwise, it's the weekend. You can email me, Derek@DailyCaller.com, and go out, have a couple of adult beverages if that's your thing. Relax. Have fun. The feces meets the fan again on Monday, and we shall be here to interpret the splatter. Have a great one.
It's a substantive question. I don't want to talk about your marriage. I know that there are issues there.